Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Oh, well, hello, the internet. Come on in. Have a seat. Take a seat, because it's time for today's lesson. It's season 144, episode 3 of The Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is the podcast where we take a deep dive. Excuse me as I burp up my cold brew. Sorry, Dan. This is the podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness, and we say, officially, off the rip, it's fuck the Koch brothers, fuck Fox News, fuck Rush Limbaugh, Buck Sexton, J.K. Rowling, any of them, anybody who's not here for equality and inclusivity, we're not about it, so get the hell on out. It's Wednesday, July 29th, 2020. My name is Miles Gray, a.k.a. Okay, just so you know, that's the instrumental that's still not a player by Big Pun. I don't want to smoke alone no more. I don't have COVID, I just cough a lot. But Miles still got a smoke indoors. Thank you so much to Matt Dick, though, at Matt Dick, though, for that one. And also, you know what, just for good measure, you did write the verse. So, hey, I'm still rolling papers, blessed that be flavored. Smoking that papa, ha ha, see you later. I'm gone, Zeitgeist sweet, Zeitgeist speaks. And the tweets, Jack O.B., 10th out each. I mean, you had that going there. I wish the beat was there, so otherwise I just sound like a man busking on the corner. But without further ado, allow me to introduce somebody with more talent than I, especially as a vocal performer and comedian and just generally as an entity. It is the one and only scam goddess herself, Lacey Mosley.
Hey, what's up? Okay, I could not get an AKA in time, but it's Lacey Mosley, AKA
I'm sorry, I don't have... Just allow me to just blow the doors off of this building right now. Well, even in a panic, you're still coming up with the best thing I could ever think of with 3 hours of preparation.
I need to stop panicking. I feel like I'm doing that a lot lately.
Yeah, when really just trust the force. Trust in your own abilities. That's really the lesson today. Lacey, please help me welcome today's guest. Somebody who has been on the show numerous times, but it's been far too long. Somebody who I'm always like, man, bro, I was want to hang out with this dude more. Please help me welcome the hilarious and talented Noah Gardensworts.
Thank you so much for having me. Wonderful to be back. I'm not going to try AKA after Lacey just hit the vocals like that. I'll just say happy to be back. Wonderful to be here with both of you.
Yes. And yes, congrats Noah. On your new family as well. I realize your son beautiful was born in the
thank
during
you. Yeah,
the
I'll be Noah, AKA new dad. Yeah.
Yeah.
We just had come a baby on, boy daddy 2 months ago.
Okay. And how was, did you have the bris yet? When do you have the bris?
Yeah, we had the bris. You typically have the bris on the 8th day. We had to wait until the 10th day because he was borderline jaundice and like everything has to be medically cleared. So we just had to get his levels down a little bit. And it was the new frontier. You know, everyone's been doing the Zoom bris. Normally, it's a big to-do with all the family and friends. You have a whole lot of people. We actually just had me, my wife, the Moyle, and then my sister lives in New York, and Esther's mother drove up from Florida to be here for the first 2 weeks. So there were just the five of us.
Oh, dope. Very exclusive.
We recorded it and sent it out to some of the family to watch, like on a YouTube link.
How many people get the bris link? Like, how big is that invite circle?
Well, we sent the link out to probably 25 people just because I have a huge family. I mean, we definitely weren't sending it out to a lot of people. But just
and your
family's
like heavy in the rabbinic game, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yeah, I have a pretty observant family, so a lot of them were anxious to see the ceremony. We didn't do a close-up on the actual cutting of the foreskin.
Esther,
you didn't give them angles?
What's funny was
for a
funny
second
is,
screen experience.
No, you know what? My wife, Esther, actually set up the camera where, like, the angle was unfortunately kind of right on it, but she did some clever editing where like the speeches
cutaways
and the actual ceremony was done, and then she did a star swipe screen cutaway on the actual cutting.
Esther's
that's
killing
cute
it.
That's good editing. I love it.
Well, Noah, we're gonna get to know a little bit more about you, even better, even more, even deeper into who you are, but let's just talk a little bit, give them a preview about what's on the show docket today. Going to talk about Bill Barr, the attorney general. You know, he's supposed to speak to the, to Congress on Tuesday to talk about, you know, what the fuck is going on with all these federal goons in the street. We'll talk about what, you know, just nonsense and outright lies he'll be saying there. Then we'll have to get into a little bit about what is going on with Trump and the Republican Party. Just some interest. The desperation is there. We're just not sure what to make of it quite yet. Then we'll also talk about, you know, in honor of the scam goddess, somebody who finessed a PPP loan and secured some luxury items with that loan, as well as, you know, a 1%er Coachella that went down in the Hamptons, because that was wild, just visual to even look at. But first, before we get into all of that, Noah, what's something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
Well, the last thing I searched was the definition of the word auspicious, because we were watching Indian Matchmaker, if you haven't seen on Netflix, it's a pretty dope watch, and they kept on saying matches had auspicious timing, and I think a lot of people confuse auspicious with suspicious and think that it has a negative connotation, but it's actually a good thing, and so I thought that, but I just wanted to make sure, so I guess that'll let you know that I like to have my vocab correct.
Exactly. Right. Especially there's no half-stepping with their vocab. Have you seen, Lacey, you said you had already watched the entire series, right?
Well, which one?
Indian Matchmaking?
Oh, yes, I devoured it.
I still have like 5 to go, but I love it. What did you think of Houston's very own, Aparna?
Aparna? That was rough, man. But you know what? Here's what I'll say. After a few episodes, it became abundantly clear to me that Aparna's mom was the problem, not so much Aparna. Because as soon as they got her mom out the way and she met with the astrologist and she started taking the matchmaker's advice to heart and just kind of doing her own thing, she definitely had a positive shift in her attitude. And then when you could see the way her mom would speak about the matches or even about her own life, you could tell that she was putting a lot of pain from her past on Aparna and ruining the whole thing.
Yeah, that's what's interesting too. In a way, it's almost like therapy because I'm sure for a lot of kids who have like, you know, overbearing parents or Asian parents, immigrant parents who, you know, try very hard to get you to this country to get a good life for you, then there's like this secondary thing of like, I cannot let my parents down no matter what. And then, you begin to see that.
Had that.
Yeah.
Aparna had that. But also, Aparna was just like, sometimes her like specifics that she wanted for people.
She
was
hurting.
Girl, you just hate happiness.
She was hurting.
She was like, I don't want a guy who's funny. Like,
She's
why are you
hurting
trying to make jokes?
Right.
I don't want to laugh.
She's hurting.
I was like, what you mean?
When she said that, I was like, you are hurting. You're hurting.
Yeah. She was hurting a lot. And also, like, baby girl, traveling is not a personality. Like, how you, like, every 5 minutes, she was like, I've been to 40 countries. I've been.
And had nothing but bad stuff to say about everywhere she traveled. She loved to travel, but also hated everywhere she traveled to.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
She's like, I've been to Bali. It's ass.
Hated it. Yeah.
You're so right. She hated everywhere she went. And then she would say very specific niche things. Like, I can't remember. She said she wanted to go.
Have you ever been to Bruges in Belgium? It's so ghetto.
Right. Like, she was like, I want to go see the flamingos in this one very specific river. You don't know about it?
Yeah, no, she was horrified that someone didn't know anything about, like, the salt deposits in Bolivia or something.
Yes.
I mean.
That's what it was.
Facts, though. Really, though. If you don't, like, why are we even on this date? Right. That's why I give them 1 hour. I go to the perfect wine bar. They're setting up the table. They're tearing down the restaurant within 45 minutes. Yeah, that was it was an interesting watch, but I would dive
deeper.
Yeah,
she had lots of guards up. But you know what? That's actually interesting. I might take that from her, though, as what, like,
find a spot that closes like that?
Oh, yeah. That one, I was actually like, no, she's on to something there. Because if the date's going well, you can go somewhere afterwards closing. But if it's not, you're like, all right, well, guess we got to get out of here. But this was not.
And if it's trash, they start to turn the lights off as soon as you arrive.
Right. You're like, oh, damn, something's going on. Noel, what's something that you think is overrated?
Okay, this is controversial.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
I've recently discovered Dr. Seuss is hella overrated. In having to read the children's book to my baby, let me tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish is trash.
Wow.
Trash. Listen.
Those are the original bars.
Listen, no. Dr. Seuss has hits. He's got hits. I'm not trying to take away some of his great ones. But everyone just knows the One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish. I defy anyone to read all 30 to 40 pages of that book out loud to yourself, your friends, or your child and not be like, this is garbage.
Wait, there's more than just that one page that says One Fish, Two Fish,
exactly,
Red Fish, Blue Fish?
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
Oh.
Wait, what they be saying? What's the rest of it? I've never heard anything else.
Do you have a zoink? Go get a yoink. How much zoink can a yoink go boink? It's just like, it's gibberish and lazy writing.
Oh, so, man.
I'm sticking.
He was on a wave. He was on a wave, you know, like he was just writing that shit. They're like, I mean, it's going off. The kids are loving it.
He was the Shakespeare of our time. Come on, one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish.
I'm saying he's allowed to rest on his laurels of a good catchy title. No one's reading the entire anthology and realizing how lazy the book got.
I don't think I remember even as a kid getting tired of it. Like, maybe Green Eggs and Ham is the only one I've read all the way through.
Because
I can kind of remember what it was about. Everything else, I'm like, yo, this is just shit.
Green Eggs and Ham has bars. I think, I forget the title. I think it's like the Sneetches and the Starbelly Fish or something that was all metaphor
Star
for
Belly
racism.
Sneetches.
Yeah. And like, so he's got some heat. Like, I'm not saying as a whole he presents no value, but I'm saying he's overrated.
If you look at the whole, because right now you sound a little bit like Lil Xan when he said Tupac was overrated.
And those
kids pressed him at the Del Taco in Cerritos. If you saw that video, that was like Lil Xan.
No, but I'll ride harder for Tupac than I will for Dr. Seuss.
No, but I just like, in the beginning, the vibe of Lacey and I were like, Dr. Seuss, somebody better let him know.
I will say this. Like, Dr. Seuss was getting the coins, right? So he had the popping books. But sometimes, you know, when you're getting coins to just crank out a book every now and then, you got to crank out some mid at some point.
Right.
I mean, there's truly a song that's Put on a Happy Face by Destiny's Child. And I listened to it the other day in the car and realized that I think they just didn't write the song. Like, it's like, I'm breathing, I'm grateful, so put on a happy face. They have, like, a good chorus, and then everything else is, like, people on the beat. Like, Kelly Rowland comes on, she's like, it's me.
That's it.
I was like, where's the song at? And then Michelle comes on, she's like, everything's gonna be all right, everything's gonna be okay. And I was like, no one wrote this song.
But you know that they couldn't give Michelle the It's Me lyric, because no one would know who it was.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Oh.
Is she okay? I feel like Kelly, I mean, I always hear about Kelly, you know.
Tanitra is doing just fine.
Oh, I mean, not Tanitra. Okay, yeah. Well, everybody.
That's Kelly. That's Michelle's real name is Tanitra.
Really? It is?
Yes. They took that girl name away because they said her name was too ghetto. They all got names. Beyonce, Calandria, and Tanitra.
Yeah.
That's Destiny's Child.
See what happens? They Ellis, Ellis Islanded their names.
Beyonce is the only one that got to stay.
Gotta be
Beyonce,
of course.
And her name is literally a last name that her mama like zhuzhed up. The last name is Beyonce, and then she made it Beyonce.
Wow.
You know what, Tina? All right. There needs to be a Tina Knowles name generator. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you put your name in, and then it gets names. And it gets Tina Knowlesified. You know what? Somebody, build that. Yeah. Ooh, Solange Selectives.
Yeah.
I remember that shampoo. No, what is something that you think is underrated?
Okay, here's something very probably specific to me, but underrated was having a child during a global pandemic. A lot of people assumed that it was going to be horrible when they heard that we were pregnant or expecting. But honestly, I have all day, every day to be home with my newborn, and I'm getting that quality time with my baby that I never otherwise would have gotten or had to fight for paternity leave that might not have been given to me. So this has been the one blessing in disguise of this entire situation.
Because between like working on shows or gigging on the road and stuff, what it had had this not happened, how much time did you foresee you having with your son?
I would have
or both of you, because your wife is also comedian as well.
I would have blocked off a few months of not doing the road. Like, that's fine. For sure. I could turn down the road. But as far as being in the writer's room, I would have been in there probably 9 to 6 every day. And so based on his hours of sleeping, I might have got home for bath time and putting him to bed, but I really would not have had a lot of great time with him. And now I honestly, the understanding I have of him, I understand what he needs and wants when he cries based on the different pitches. The communication is on point. He smiles when he sees me because he knows me so well. It's just been a blessing.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you better take time to be a dad.
Yes.
Like
okay?
that, like those PSAs. We were just talking about that yesterday. Have you taken time to be a dad today? He's taking all the time.
That's how you know fatherhood is a scam. Because even Noah, you saying like fighting for paternity leave, like that shouldn't be a thing. Like, there absolutely should just be paternity leave for men in this country. But we really have scammed this country into believing that women are the only people who need to take care of their children or who even want to.
To the point where it's confusing to companies. Like, why would we give the man time to go take care of the child?
Yeah,
what do you mean?
Crazy.
Huh? No. Anyway.
But that pandemic fatherhood, that pandemic fatherhood is hitting. So if the bubonic plague seems to be on the rise again and you're in a good relationship, maybe take off that condom and go for it.
Knuckle down and be there for the shorties. What's like one of the first lessons you learned, like, as a dad? You know, like, I feel like I was just even babysitting, like, or watching my niece over the weekend, and I had like instant realizations about like gears you have to shift mentally to make this thing work, fatherhood, parenthood.
I mean, I think the proof will be in the putting down the road, but one thing I'm doing that I think will pay dividends is I don't baby talk to him. I speak to him in complete sentences. I speak to him as
like a goddamn man.
Yeah, I use this I use this voice when I speak to him, no matter what I'm talking about. And so, unless I'm reading that bullshit one fish, two fish. But,
then you're like, one fish, two fish.
But no, I already feel like he's going to be very communicative and that his verbal is going to be on point.
See? Yeah, although I do feel like you've been disrespecting Dr. Seuss to your baby, which ain't.
No, well, that's the thing. I still
like,
read him the books.
This is trash.
Read him the books.
Right. That is something, though. Yeah, I realized. I think, like, even my parents wouldn't baby talk, like, just straight shooting. Mm-hmm. Like, if you had a question, like, what's drugs? They're like, which ones? And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not ready for this conversation. I will come back when I have a more specific answer. But yeah, I think there's some
also the thing I learned early on. I wish I would have had my core more on point because my lower back is already on fire just from bending over, picking up this little 15-pound baby all the time. And if
get
I maybe tightened up a little bit before he arrived, I think I'd be in a slightly better physical shape.
Yeah.
Now you can use him as a weight now.
Yeah, I have no choice.
Exactly.
Yeah, Esther's doing 15-pound baby squats with him to try to get back.
There you go.
Oh, it's so
just start doing some high intensity interval training with your baby, just as like a new kettlebell, you know?
Yeah.
It all works. Why not?
He seems like a quiet baby too. My sister was very colicky. We're 13 years apart, and she is only alive today because of Law and Order SVU. Because there was an episode about shaken baby syndrome, I was like, oh, you can't shake the baby, it'll kill it.
They made
okay.
us.
That's the only reason she's alive.
Wait, because you were about to shake the baby? And only
I was
because
about to shake the hell out of my sister. she would just scream for hours on end about nothing.
Right.
She would be changed, hair laid.
Shout
fed.
Out to SVU.
Yeah, but you're saying because you as a child had witnessed SVU, you're like, actually, that's off the table.
Mariska Hargitay saved my sister's life.
Wow.
Okay. That's lovely.
Because she could scream for hours. She's got lungs on her.
Right.
And I would just be like, because like at the time we were staying in a hotel, I was babysitting her every day. Our house was being built in Texas. And so I was just like in a hotel room with her all day and she'd just be screaming for no reason.
Wow. Ugh. Didn't you tell her that all the time? You're like, you came this close. Came this close if it weren't for Mariska Hargitay.
That's why Mariska is the highest paid actress on TV. She's literally out here
the money.
Saving lives.
Yeah.
But yeah, like 90
Moses, I was 13.
Moses is chill. He's honestly, he eats a lot, but unless he's hungry, he's cool.
Right. Finally, Noah, what's a myth? What's something people think is true, you know, to be false or vice versa?
Well, I don't know that a lot of people think it's true, but I'll say based on stories and tweets that have been surfacing over the last few weeks, I would like to attack the myth head on that white Jews are fake Jews that stole the identity of the original Israelites. And I'm not even here to take away Judaism or identity from anyone else. I'm not here to say that the original Israelites were white, because we all know that they weren't. The original Israelites and Hebrews were absolutely black or brown. But I, as an Ashkenazi Jew, am not here as the result of identity theft.
Right.
I am also truly a Jew. That was more the result of diaspora and expulsion that led into Europe.
Yeah.
I like the way that you phrase this, because...
You mean, what?
You know,
I was going to say, Noah, man, you're not going to be able to go to a barbershop with that talk, man.
Right. This is peak Hotep.
Yeah, peak Hotep.
This is peak Hotep, yeah. Okay? We were a real Hebrew Israelite. Yeah. Like, this is like
Nick Cannon got caught out there.
Nick Cannon.
Yeah, it's getting hot out there.
Yeah, it's really something else.
Girl, that's why you got your period. Like Barry Hotep. It's top peak Hotep.
Yeah, it's very many interesting conversations had to be had. I know people who work at the radio station where Nick Cannon records his show at. I used to work there at Power 106. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I saw some people defending him, and I'm like, what are you doing exactly? And they're like, like him as a person, like he's good to me. And I'm like, but the thing you have to understand is what he said on his face is just bold anti-Semitism. Like,
I'm not even coming for Nick specifically. But like all the statements that have been coming out when it started with Deshaun Jackson's repost of a fake Hitler quote, it's like,
right.
I can't speak for every Jew, but I know I was never bothered or offended by the idea that the original Hebrews were black. I don't think anyone was arguing that or upset by that. I was offended by the idea that the identity was then stolen by white Jews who are using the Hebrew identity to dominate the world through a Zionist global agenda. And I'm like, now you're just talking tinfoil hat shit.
Right. Yeah. Oof.
I will say, though, I think that in polarizing times, we do start to see like our Jewish brothers and sisters kind of come back out of the woodwork. Cause I won't lie. I have felt at times, I want to articulate this in a way that's clear and not offensive, but like some minorities have been able to not be minorities at times.
Oh, sure.
Whereas I've never had the privilege to do that.
Absolutely.
And so I think that some of the things that they're saying comes from this animosity of like, oh, we're not allowed to not ever be minorities. Like, you know what I mean?
But it's
articulated in a horrible way, and it's very anti-Semitic, and it's not even accurate, which is why it's so embarrassing to see so many people defending it, because I think where their real angst comes from is that, and not from stealing identities.
Yeah, I mean, I will say this. I don't think there's any question that both racism and anti-Semitism exists, and I also don't think there's any question that it's more difficult to be black in America and arguably in the world than it is to be Jewish in America. So there's a lot of layers to this discussion. I'll also say that I think the Jewish community could have been better over several decades of not resting on the "we marched with King in the 1960s, so we're always like." There's absolutely ways that the Jewish community in general could have been better allies over the years and over the decades with the black community. Not to say that there aren't Jews or the Jewish community that has consistently been on that. Like, I would like to think that I have always been a good ally to the black community, but I'm just one person. But that is a separate discussion from the idea that white Jews aren't Jews at all. Like, we're talking about two
and
different things.
They're conflating.
Right. There's absolutely validity to what you were saying. And I think frustrations boil over and then discussions bleed into each other and things get said that have nothing to do with each other. But in terms of the myth, I'm trying to get rid of the myth that white Jews are fake Jews.
Yeah. And I think even with a lot of the times where people were coming out with those conspiracy theories, and then when they had to realize, they're like, oh, right, what I said is dangerous and bad. Actually, I don't mean that. Then there was a secondary effect where people were like, why are you letting these white people silence you? And then there was another level of not examining what was being said. And like this whole thing was being reduced to like, you see what happens when you speak the truth.
Right. And that's when it becomes dangerous, like a snake eating its tail, where it's like, okay, you say Jews control the media, then you get in trouble by Jews or in the media. And all of a sudden Jews look bad for calling out anti-Semitism just because they're using the media to call out the anti-Semitism that was spread through it. So it's like damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Well, also, I think that what people forget is that anti-Semitism and the whispers of Jewish people having control and power are literally what sent Germany into the Holocaust. So it's like hate speech is so dangerous, and you can't get upset with people for silence stopping it immediately because it's killed people.
Right.
It's been so dangerous.
But I think people don't want to look at it as like, oh, me saying that is actually anti-Semitism. I think it's like a very narrow way to preserve your ego to be like, what I said is facts, and therefore what you can take from that, I'm not interested in the nuance of what I said. That's what I said.
Right. And deeper than that, I will say a lot of Jewish people aren't even educated on Jewish history to the point where like anytime anti-Semitism arises, Jewish people are always Holocaust, Holocaust, Holocaust. But the truth is there's been anti-Semitism that has hurt Jewish people based on economic anti-Semitism or the rumors of trying to dominate or control things since the beginning of European civilization. And so it's like it's been happening for way longer than before 1940.
Yeah, right.
And so that's where it gets dangerous. There's a historical precedent going back to the 800, 900, 1200, 1400 where Jews were expelled from countries or attempted to be genocided over the thought that they were controlling finances or, you know, the media or resources of the time. So that's where it gets historically dangerous. But that being said, it's a tough time. A lot of people are frustrated and there's a lot of misdirected frustration and anger. And I understand.
Yes. Yeah.
And also just because anti-blackness is pervasive. So, you know, I think a lot of that is just reactionary behavior from people who don't understand that they're talking about two completely different things. And it's really disappointing, though. I love that Nick Cannon apologized. I know you weren't speaking specifically about him, but his apology felt very sincere.
I loved it. I loved it. Honestly, it was like I wasn't sitting around waiting for an apology from anyone, but I thought that his apology was incredibly authentic, sincere. I was moved by it. I appreciated it. And all I'll say to kind of wrap up the subject, because I don't want to dominate the show with this topic, but I will say that one thing I've been very outspoken for is it's incredibly important that Jewish people out there don't use this as an excuse not to continue to support the Black community in their fight for equality. I think it's really, really important now more than ever that Jews double down on their allyship, support Black Lives Matter, support Black causes, and continue to build that relationship as opposed to letting this be a bridge that burns down.
Absolutely.
Right. And also, we're not a monolith. Like, we're not all Hoteps. Like,
I also don't think the things that have been said are representative of the popular Black community's thoughts. But the reason it's kind of amplified is it's being said by a lot of Black people who have large platforms over the last few weeks. It's just intensified with Black celebrities coming out and saying.
It's a wild how many like old hip hop people I've had to put down because of that. I'm like, damn, Pete Rock.
Right.
Like, I guess I will just reminisce over you now.
You are embarrassing us. You're embarrassing us.
Anyway.
But also, I want to say, Noah, that's actually, to just cap this, when people offend a specific group or, you know, anyone, it's never the responsibility of people who are their fans or whoever to, like, accept their apology. So the fact that you said you read his apology and you thought it was sincere, to me, means more than me thinking that because I wasn't the person who was offended. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah, see, okay. look at us.
Moving forward in positivity and love.
Well, yeah, and yes! I think that's really what's going on. I think it just shows how fraught the whole environment is and how tense everything is. And there's because it's palpable. I mean, but aside from the financial, economic, and existential risks that have already existed that are only being exacerbated by the pandemic now. We're attempting to have some kind of reckoning with white supremacy and systemic racism in the country on top of like a thing where we're like, what's going to happen in the election? Is this going to be some kind of total fuck fest? What is going to happen? We just don't know. So yeah, it's very tense times, which is why we all got to just take a second and remember, you know, we're all on the same team. Most
Amen.
Of the time. Most
Amen.
Of the time. Yeah. Most of the time. I would say actually most of the 99% of the time. Unless you're in that 1%. Okay, let's take a quick break and we're going to be right back and get into some stories.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
And we're back, and just want to check in with Attorney General Bill Barr, fuckboy in chief, when it comes to meddling in the American legal system to protect the president and his allies. So, you know, he had to go to Capitol Hill Tuesday because he has some explaining to do, as lawmakers wanted to know what was going on with this federal response to protests. And I think based on... Now, as we record this, we haven't actually heard his remarks, but his prepared remarks were released by the Justice Department, so we do have an idea of what his testimony is going to be. Again, they're really curious to know what is going on in Portland and these other cities. You have people hopping out of unmarked vans, snatching people up, shooting people, blinding them, maiming them. It just seems completely out of control and actually antithetical if you're trying to establish order, because all it seems to be doing is riling people up more. So what is actually going on? I think most cynical people are saying this is just propaganda. So Trump has some visuals to be like, you see who cleans up the streets? Little Dunny. But this is what an idea of what he's going to say based on his prepared remarks, that Barr will decries the violence taking place in Portland and other cities, claiming that they are disconnected from the death of George Floyd, which he described, quote, as a horrible event. He then simultaneously undermines the message of racial justice demanded by protesters in written remarks by saying that although Floyd's death was a, quote, shocking event, end quote, the police killing of, as he puts it, quote, unarmed black men is, quote, fortunately quite rare, end quote. That's what
we're just lying now? We're not even going to try to do facts no more?
That's just so next level. That's some next level bullshit. You know, fortunately, the killing of unarmed black men is fortunately quite rare.
Never happens.
There's not just an inexhaustible list of victims of police violence. Okay, and then as he goes on, he goes on to rebuke the demonization of police and suggests that crime rates increase when communities, quote, turn on their police, because that makes police more, quote, risk averse and crime rates soar. So Not only, so let's just, I guess, take it apart piece by piece. First, he's going to say that the protesters are disconnected from the death of George Floyd. That is complete nonsense. I mean, maybe you can say very specifically, are they there exactly for George Floyd and actually not to hold their own police department accountable for the untold atrocities that they've committed? I think either one, but it's still, the sentiment is still the same, that people are there for justice, racial justice.
Right. They're playing semantics. They're there for the social cause that led to things like George Floyd's death happening, even right. if they're not there directly protesting George Floyd.
Exactly. And I guess that's one way to, again, delegitimize what's happening. And then saying that, yeah, that this, that it's, even if it's shocking, that it's a rare event. That is that's just completely disingenuous. I think there's plenty of information out there that would say otherwise. But yeah, this is kind of what is being done to, A, I think for people who just watch at home and might not be as connected to the issues that are going on, and they see his words, they might think that, because the way he's going to put it is that there are anarchists and outside agitators who are actually doing this, rather than trying to actually let people know that the situation is so bad that these people have been in the streets for 60 plus days protesting because they know that there is a terrible, terrible problem in this country. And that's what they're right. trying to avoid with this kind of shit.
And just to illustrate this with numbers, let's just pick one city, New York City, right? Black people, 73% of the shooting victims are Black in New York City, and Black people only make up 24% of the population. So the fact that he even tried to say that we don't have a problem, like, I'm just so tired of being gaslit by racists. Like, we all know what's happening here. And the thing that really is infuriating about Trump is that racist and evil ass white people used to at least try to tell the truth or some sort of semblance of the truth. But now it's just like everyone is fully willing to go to court or go anywhere and just make things up. It's like, yeah, you don't even have to prepare because you're going to sit down and just make things up. Donald Trump lies so much that we literally have so many fact checkers who can't even keep up with the lies.
In the tens of thousands, yeah, now. And I think, you know, this is the thing. It's, they have to try and scare people out of this idea that we need reform within our legal system and our law enforcement. That's the biggest thing, because the more that this just becomes about what's the federal government doing, the less we're talking about, we actually really, really need to sit down and think about how we're spending our money, how we're policing neighborhoods, how we're just describing poverty as crime rather than calling poverty poverty and saying we need to address poverty or lack of access, rather than just saying it's criminal and that's why I need police. And hey, watch out, because look, if you're Black and brown people get too upset about how they're brutalized and they start protesting, that's going to make police, you know, upset. And then, you know, they might not actually want to help anybody. And then, so, you know, then crime rates are going to go up. It's just, I mean, really dark.
It's all language politics. And it's been that way since the idea of defund the police started kind of trending as popular, because they knew damn well that defund the police meant reallocating the money that was going to police to use other social platforms or social services to help in other ways. But they were painting it as just a picture of take money away, get rid of the police, and then there will be no one to help.
Right.
And they know exactly what they're doing. They're just playing with the language of it to scare people who aren't going to do the research or don't know any better.
It happens in every community. The same
and
tactics.
We talked about this. Mm-hmm. We talked about this yesterday. America was built on slavery, and frankly, it doesn't work without slavery. I mean, we've seen during this pandemic how our economy has fallen apart because everything is people being paid slave wages or the police helping to incarcerate Black and brown people so that they can work for basically free. Like, mm-hmm. and it just, the society in these people's minds doesn't function without exploiting Black and brown bodies. So they're going to try to fight as hard as they can for the police, because they use the police to gerrymander. They use prisons to gerrymander so that they can, you know, equate like more power in cities that are heavily white ring and Republican. Like, they use the police to incarcerate Black and brown folks so that they can work for nothing. It's just, it's so exhausting because they know exactly what they're doing, and at least they used to hide it better.
It's, well, this is,
well,
why,
let me ask you this. Would you prefer they hid it? Like, it's disgusting in either way, but would you rather it be out in the open or hidden?
I mean, that's the gag, isn't it? Because part of you is like, which form of racism do I prefer?
Right. I mean, it's Sophie's choice. It's two horrible choices, like, that you shouldn't have to choose. You shouldn't have to choose between, but I guess if the question is, would you rather it be hidden or out in the front so at least a few people can wake up to what's happening, which is preferable.
I mean, I think the lazy version to say I prefer when they didn't do it, but I think deep down it's better when people are just out with it, because you can be like, okay, miss me with that shit. And also, like,
right,
if you
say it with your chest,
is this an order of
say
smoke?
It with your chest,
okay,
racism.
I can bring that to your doorstep. But the thing, yeah, you know, I
one
think
one order of smoke, please.
Yeah, one order. I'll have three smokes, please, for my daughter and my wife.
Anybody else? Would anyone else like a smoke? I'm like ordering smokes.
And a refill on their smoke? Okay, just making sure. I got a lot of tables today. Got a lot of tables. You know, I think because also because of a lot of the influence of, like, overt white supremacy, that it's sort of waning, or the symbols are going down, it's inspiring more people to get more aggressive with it, because they realize it's a guy keeps saying it's like the fourth quarter right now. It's like, okay, you can't just be in your house thinking that the other races are going to do it. If you also are down for this, like, white supremacist utopia, then you got to go out there too with your stars and bars. And that's kind of what you're seeing now. Like, the counter protests are getting, like, a little more coordinated than they were before, when it was just all BLM marches and things like that. You're starting to see that. Again, there are white people who are also invested in a version of this country where it's business as usual from, like, about the 40s, and, like, let's stop progress around there.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's that old joke that a lot of comedians have said, where we've been, I don't know if you guys have been in this position, but I have definitely been in the position where I was talking to white people and they were like, if there was a time period that you could go back to, like, what would be your vibe? Like, right. I would definitely go to the 20s, like 1920s. And it's like, bitch, I wouldn't go to no past. I'm trying to go to the future. It's bad for me here.
Go to Wakanda. Can I go to the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Right. But that's why Make America Great Again was such an excellent brand name, because it was like, we're going to put all the browns back in their places, guys. We're going to put the browns in their places, the Jews, the gays, the disabled. Everybody. We're going to suppress everyone like we used to.
Well, yeah,
I mean, now you understand why Mad Men was such a popular show.
Right.
Oh, God.
So many white families could just watch it and realize how it used to be.
They're like, honey,
like,
I
remember
wish
back in the day
like
we could get drunk at work and harass our secretaries?
Why don't you wear an apron, honey? So, you know, the other thing, let's just talk a little bit about Trump. One stupid petty lie that came out is, you know, Dr. Fauci threw out the pitch for the Nationals, and that apparently set off a wave of conspiracies. I've even heard from inside knowledge that just QAnon people were even getting swept up the man on the receiving end of Dr. Fauci's pitch. That it was all, like, a whole thing was some kind of conspiracy, whatever. But people were like, I think obviously he's been somewhat of a positive figure throughout this pandemic. Mm-hmm. And Trump could not stand any of that shit. And he was basically saying, like, you know, well, I'm going to be throwing out the first pitch at Yankee Stadium. You know, he said he was like, he's really good friends with, you know, the team over at the Yankees. And he had been offered, you know, in the past to open out throw the opening pitch. And this, so he went out there and really said, he's like, yeah, so I'm going to be throwing it out. No one knew this. The Yankees didn't even know this. They're like, what are you talking about? His aides had to, like, scramble to try and be like, yeah, so the president wants to throw out the first pitch. And they're like, what? Then, like, over the, like, a couple days later, Trump is like, because of my strong focus on the China virus, including scheduled meetings on vaccines, our economy, and much else, I won't be able to be in New York to throw out the opening pitch for the Yankees on August 15th.
So first of all, even in recovering from his lie, he had to get racist with it.
Yeah.
Like, the first line of his excuse for not going to is calling it the China virus.
This is
also, girl, you don't even go here.
Yeah.
You were not invited. That's just like, this year I turned down my Emmy nomination.
Right,
because
Yeah.
I definitely got one today. Right. Like, what?
I want somebody else to get some shine.
I want somebody else to get some Emmys, okay? Yeah. It ain't all about me.
You are such a kind goddess. What would we do without your kindness?
What?
But yeah, it is a weird. It definitely has that whole, it's so juvenile, that kind of lying. Like, I haven't seen that since, like, high school, of that kind of thing where it's like, and also it's the kind of lies that used to be the plot of, like, a teen sitcom in the 90s.
I forget which sporting event it was last year. It might have been the World Series where they showed Trump and he got booed heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's also a chance that maybe the Yankees might have been even trying to work it out with him. And then his team was like, by the way, if you do this, they're going to boo the shit out of you. You know, I guess people wouldn't have been there. There's no crowd, right? So
they would still, I think, find a way for the speakers. Pump some booze in over
the
speakers.
We would bring some booze in, okay? Even if we have to use them, like, stock booms.
But I mean, the man's ego knows no limits.
And it's getting bad because, you know, we all know people whose egos have gotten in the way of them succeeding, or actually their egos have actually made their problems worse for them because of an inability to let go of this very like self-centered, I must protect the perception people have of me because that's more important than what I experience is on the experience on the inside as a human being, whatever. And it's getting to the point where you can start to see how far he's going. Like it, every day it's some kind of escalation on things that we never thought we would be talking about, but here we are. And I think there's no way for us to cease to be surprised by anything we're seeing. Like, I think we always have to steel ourselves to be like, it's going to, I can't imagine him dialing it back.
Yeah, like that's right. No. It's unfortunate to already be mentally preparing for this or even for the government or the armed forces to put a plan in place, but there's 0% chance this man honors the election results if he doesn't win.
It's that
no,
or
absolutely not.
The only other way, right? Because I know people who are like big time ego people who will never take a L publicly. They do the thing, they quit. They rage quit.
Shut off the Madden game in the fourth quarter because they're getting blown out.
So that's it. It's in the wheelhouse. It's in the quiver of that kind of person. But I just don't know with this. Like, that's such a big L to take publicly like that. Like, it'll be hard to spin that in your own mind. Like, you can do that with the homies because you can just smash the Xbox and run out the room. But with this, he'll be like, yeah, I'm actually quitting because fuck the haters. And then you just go back to, like, what, New York and then deal with all these lawsuits? I don't know.
I'm of two minds. One mind is that if Donald Trump does win again, I'm going to buy a house because the market's going to plummet. So that could be great for me.
This is Lacey Mosley's 2021 financial playbook.
Listen, y'all, get with these scams, okay?
Start getting on Redfin and get your eye on some houses and then figure out how to
get your eye on some damn houses. If Donald Trump is president again, y'all go buy a house, okay? Because the market's going to plummet. but at the same time, I just want, it's probably very fun, honestly, to work as one of Donald Trump's staffers because he's just constantly saying crazy shit. So your whole day is just spin. being on Scandal in real life. It's like you're Olivia Pope. They're all wearing big purses and big white coats and white hats.
And no red wine, but they work for the devil. And no red wine because he doesn't
No red
drink.
Wine.
She loves that wine. Okay.
Well, you don't need to drink when you have Adderall.
No.
Yeah,
not at all.
He's on meth. He's on that fucking allergy medication, man.
He loves it. He's loving it. So the thing, because of his, you know, he's impetuous, he's impulsive, he has no discipline, he's completely, you know, guided by his ego. You know, the GOP is continuing to semi-privately panic over how bad, like, the president is just doing and just at running for office. Like, he's not even doing the good thing about politicking, which is sort of like, yeah, like, I get that I can't just win with the people that, like, are my ride or dies. Like, I got to trick a couple people to go out with me. So I'll say what I got to say. I'll compliment you on what you're wearing, on, like, on your house, on your yard, and maybe you'll consider voting for me. This man is not doing any of that. Like, he's not even doing the bare sort of minimum. He's just being like, fuck it. Maybe if I just get the, you know, his hardcore base to come out, that's how he's going to win. And, you know, he forgets that in 2016, like, he was able to court some, you know, blue collar Obama voters. That was
53% of white women.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. That's what
he
was
turned
happening.
Pennsylvania red, and Pennsylvania was blue for Obama. He turned it fucking red.
Absolutely. And I think so because of that, I think his ego is saying, like, look at me. I'm the god MC. Nobody wants to fucking step to this. And so has no sort of reasonable way of looking at his reelection chances. And when they show him polls, he says they're bullshit, they're fake. He goes and, like, and in one tweet will attack the Reagan family, Fox News, and Paul Ryan. Like, these are, like, establishment Republican people. You have to remember, like, yes, there are conservatives, and then there are, like, the full-on Trumpists who are, like, no matter how hard he hits the gas on white supremacy, like, they will not let go of the vehicle. They're like, no, we want to hit the wall with you. Like, this is, we're in. But a lot of people, you do end up, like, you know, flinging a few people off the car because you're going a little bit too fast for them. And that's the thing that a lot of consultants are worried about. It's like, you don't want to deflate those voters either. You need them energized because we're looking at a really bad situation.
And well, here's why I think Trump might be on to something. Mm-hmm. I think that the reason he isn't courting voters who are probably on the fence with him right now is because he's counting on the lack of enthusiasm coming from Democrats when our candidate is someone that most of us are not excited about. We truly think that he's senile. We're voting begrudgingly because I told you guys, leg 2020. That's why I'm voting right. for Joe Biden. He said, "I want to. We should shoot folks in the leg and not the heart." And I said, "I guess I got to vote for the leg because Trump is the heart. So leg 2020 it is." Right. Okay, I'm making merch. We got to get excited. I'm going to get y'all some anklets so you can walk to the polls. But I think he's counting on that lack of enthusiasm to help him kind of even the playing field. And I don't, guys, I know a lot of liberals listen to this podcast. Y'all, we got to somehow trick ourselves into being excited, excited about this, because every time the Democrats have had a character, why do I keep saying character? Jesus Christ, because he's such a fucking buffoon. I'm like, every time we've had a candidate that we weren't excited about, think about John Kerry when we wanted Bush out of office and we were voting for Heinz Ketchup. Like, we hated him. Like, anytime we've had a candidate that we're not like jizzing over, we lose because Democrats are all about feeling and sensationalism. And it's like right now we have to be about survival. That needs to get us excited.
I mean, the only difference is I think Trump's done a hell of a job to, despite there being very low enthusiasm for the candidate, there is high enthusiasm for him to be out of office. And I think it'll be interesting how those are reconciled and how that turns out. Because one thing that I worry about is more than even the lack of enthusiasm. I even though there's low numbers for the like candidate enthusiasm, I know how a lot of people are also just feel about what this election means. Not to say that that's the entire voting population. But despite that enthusiasm, I think, and the disapproval that people have for this presidency, is that all these polls that the media keeps showing people, I think it's going to have the effect of making people complacent. On top of being like not enthusiastic, they'll be like, "Well, shit, enough people give a fuck to vote this guy out. I mean, he's losing by double digits in Texas or in Florida or whatever the state is at the day that everyone's like going like, oh, you better watch out, Trump." No, fucking no. Don't.
Right. We're not safe.
It's the fourth quarter for everybody. Everybody's got
to
pull the
and
fuck
we
up.
We all got to get the fuck in the game. Like, we all have to be doing this.
100%. And that's why I'm saying it. Like, they're already laying the groundwork to contest it based on if there's a second wave of the coronavirus or if they do that bullshit where they shut down a lot of polling places in typical Democratic or minority strongholds. Then there's going to be less people voting in person or less people willing to wait in the cold with a global pandemic going on for 6-7 hours to vote. And they're going to want to mail in their votes. And then they're going to say Trump won the in-person vote and he only lost because of the fraudulent mail-in votes. And they're laying the groundwork for that bullshit.
Damn, Noah. Damn.
It's a lot. But I think that's why it's important to not think there's no way you can take it for granted. Yes, he's objectively the worst president that most people have seen with their two eyes in their lifetime. But that doesn't mean that everybody knows that they have to go and vote. It's just more like your brand is weak. The voting results are going to look like. That's just saying right now the Biden brand is stronger than the Trump brand in those states. That does not mean people get that. Despite that, you still have to drag every motherfucker you know to the polls and make sure they vote.
Everyone you know who's 18 or older needs to be voting. Also, I just want to point this out to liberals who listen to this podcast and millennials, because we used to be on Twitter. Remember, we were on Twitter during the primaries like, "I'm not a Bernie bro," or "I love Warren," or "these were our candidates," right? Mm-hmm. I went back home to Texas and my black ass parents, who are like, my dad's in his 60s, my mom's 50, had a goddamn Mike Bloomberg sign in my yard. And I took that shit out so fast.
Oh,
I
so your parents are rich. Oh, your parents are rich, huh?
business Democrats.
That's all I know. I'm like, oh.
They do got some coin. Yeah. Like, what the fuck is this? Take this shit. Y'all embarrassing me. I live in LA. Yeah.
You gotta,
but that's
when
I talked to them and they told me that they didn't trust older white folks to vote for someone who was so liberal. So they were never going to vote for Warren. They were never going to vote for Biden. But we thought on the internet that we were having the conversation that mattered when all the people who were being quiet were the ones who changed the vote.
Biden
wasn't even campaigning at the end. He just kind of showed up out of nowhere and was like, "Here I am." Like, wait.
Yeah.
Uncle Joe, where did you come from? He emerged from a bush.
The one thing that is also just, I just want to point to the sort of level of desperation. I mean, the like a lot of the senators, especially, you know, Susan Collins, Martha McSally, there's a few people who are like in just, it just looks like there's no coming back for some of these Republican women in the Senate. And just in general, like the fundraising, like, you know, it ebbs and flows. But the wording of some of the texts from the National Republican Congressional Committee, like they're, you know, the fund, like they get the campaigns together, raise the money and identify candidates, et cetera. This is like one of the texts they've been sending to prospective donors has read like this. OK, it says the election is in 100 days. There's no time to waste. Help now or Schumer will take control of the Senate. Chip in $100 for 100 days. OK, that's fine. That's kind of a little bit like, all right, I get it.
Fear-mongering.
A little bit. But how about right. This next one? Someone just took a screen grab of their phone. That first one came these texts came 48 minutes apart. Then the next one says, we texted you twice. Why did you let your 500% Trump House Patriot match expire again? We'll give you one more chance. 500% match for 1 hour. Like, what?
Is the GOP drunk texting people?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's like a thirst DM that goes from like, hey, beautiful, to you're not even that fine anyway, bitch. Yeah. I'm going to let you respond you. One more time.
Right. We don't even need you to vote for Trump with your ugly ass. But,
oh, shit. It's definitely, and like a lot of people were pointing to that. And the way it sort of fell apart, there's this conservative pundit named Kurt Schlichter. He called the tweet out. He's a Republican. He was like, what's going on with the NRCC? He's like, this is so desperate. It just looks so weird. It talks down to people who would donate. This is all wrong. Then the NRCC's Twitter account responded with a GIF offering him a hug. And then one of the people who like runs that, like who's affiliated with them, like also like was getting sloppy in the replies. Then the NRCC Twitter like quote tweeted him and referred to him as a Karen. They're like, oh, I guess he wants to speak to the manager of this like social media campaign. Then Tucker Carlson waded into the fight and then he quote tweeted the NRCC tweet and said, why is the NRCC using ethnic slurs?
Hilarious. I mean, so sad.
It's just nonsense. They don't.
Also,
they'll call Karen an ethnic slur before they'll call the China virus an ethnic slur.
Right, 100%. Which is like definitely a slur.
But you don't. Oh, Karen is an ethnicity. Okay, just so you know.
It is an ethnicity. But also, I'm so tired. Like, we talked about this yesterday. I was like, white people, stop bothering us. If you hate us, stop bothering us. Like, we say Karen in our own homes and in our own lives. Like, we didn't tell you to join. We didn't ask you to join us with this. We were like, hey, racist white people, why don't y'all start using off slogans and phrases? Like, get out of here.
The RNCC is trying to take back the power of the word Karen.
Yeah, exactly. Reclaiming it. You know what I mean?
They are reclaiming Karen and
they're going to start saying Carrie and take the N off the end.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, shit. You did it with a hard N at the
music.
End. Yeah.
Put it on shirts.
You see, like, Laura Ingraham and Cornel West having, like, epic debates over it.
Carrie, please. Carrie, please.
Oh, my God. I can't. What if I said the N-word, Dr. West? What if I said the N-word? I would smack you.
We truly are living
put your hands in the air.
Pathetic version of the Matrix.
Yeah. And really, like, everyone, the joke continues. Like, everything's just bad writing. Like, everything just feels like a bad, rejected, you know, pitched bit from a writer's room of like a show that no one wanted to watch.
Noah, you're a stand-up. How has comedy been, like, on tour before obviously COVID, like with everything that's happening politically, like how what?
I mean, it depends on what kind of comedian you are, because like I'm not a political comedian, and so it didn't really affect my vibe in the room or like my shows. But I will say that when Trump won in 2016, I wasn't surprised as most people, because I had been doing so much comedy on the road and touring the Midwest and the South and these middle of the, like, I saw Trump enthusiasm and Trump support where a lot of people that live on coastal cities were kind of blind to it.
Right.
Yeah. That's what Billy Wayne Davis says.
Yeah, but like I will say, as a comedian during the Trump presidency, I just got Trump fatigue. And like, even though I was never a political comedian, I wouldn't talk about Trump on stage anyway, just because I was so sick of hearing about him, so sick of talking about him, that I wanted to give myself and any audience that came to see me a respite from even hearing the name Trump for 15 minutes of my set.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's... We all have to find ways to, especially like when it comes into your like work or your craft, you know what I mean? Like in some way it's like, you don't want to taint that with it being by centering it around something that's just so chaotic, rather than like using it as a way to express yourself.
Right. And for me, it wasn't like, for me, it wasn't about avoiding politics because I didn't want to immediately alienate half my audience. Like, I didn't give a fuck about hurting people's feelings or, like, right, you know, I just, like, that's just not what I talk about. So there's no reason to start talking about it now.
Right.
Oh, can you imagine some comedians come out of quarantine and suddenly they're doing, like, some new, like, woke warrior sets? Oh, no,
that's 100% happened. I mean, you saw that happen in stand-up is... I have nothing against political comedy, but if that's what you do, do it well. And if that's what you do, then let the people who do it well do it. But you saw so many comedians who aren't political comedians try to become political comedians, and then all of a sudden they just had no jokes in their act. They just went up and yelled and complained for their entire set.
Yeah. Ugh. And that's what we call it, the Daily Zeitgeist. All right, so let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
And we're back. And just quickly, there's a couple things going on in showbiz. Ellen DeGeneres, it looks like there is a internal investigation from Warner Brothers and a third party company that are looking into the workplace culture, racism, toxicity rumors that have just basically been blowing out of LA since forever. And
they,
you know,
to get her.
BuzzFeed, you know, they had a story come out, I think last week, that was talking about all kinds of stuff, you know, talking about the, especially from black employees, the racist behavior, microaggressions. There was jokes about mistaking two black female employees with the same hairstyle. There was things about someone who was having a mental health issue and like the company was completely just unsympathetic to them. On top of like when, you know, when the quarantine happened, a lot of the people who used to work on the show did not hear from their employer for a long time in the midst of this pandemic, and then found out like another company was just sort of like doing a little bit of production on the side. There's been a lot going on that I think be on top of, again, sort of like the open item or whatever you call it, just a known item, news piece that has just been sort of the anecdotal stories in this city or just in the industry about her. So what's also interesting is that they talk about two executive producers like in this article, and some of the executive producers released a statement to BuzzFeed, and this is what they're saying, you know, about what was going on. They said, quote, "We are truly heartbroken and sorry to learn that even one person in our production family has had a negative experience. It's not who we are and not who we strive to be and not the mission Ellen has set for us. For the record, the day-to-day responsibility of the Ellen Show is completely on us. We take all of this very seriously, and we realize, as many in the world are learning, that we need to do better, are committed to do better, and we will do better."
Yo, can I? Okay, I've never done this before because I'm scared of Ellen. But I am going to tell you guys two anecdotal stories that I've heard from people that I trust that I like don't think we're lying at all.
We'll say allegedly, but we'll say allegedly, you know, for
allegedly.
Reason. These are allegedly stories.
Allegedly stories. Allegedly. And so, allegedly. Mm-hmm. During Christmas,
allegedly,
Ellen allegedly would go into her staff writer's room and give everyone a present, but the presents weren't the same in value. Like, the top present was, allegedly, you get your house redecorated and Ellen pays for it. Like, that's like, you're the best. And then, allegedly, the worst gift was a Starbucks gift card. And if you got the worst gift, allegedly, you also got a lecture about why you are last place and how you can improve, unless you're gonna get fired.
Whoa, that's like some pimp shit.
Yeah, or she was allegedly watching Glengarry Glenn Ross before.
Yeah,
she...
right.
Wow. Which I just thought allegedly was so allegedly like, this is like, you just have fun being, right, you gotta have fun being chaotic evil if you're doing shit like that. Cause it's like, this is, some people are toxic cause they have short tempers or because they don't respect people, yeah, but to have a whole crafted
like a little sadistic
thing like,
yeah,
that, it's a little sadistic. And then also, allegedly.
Allegedly, mm-hmm.
I know a
allegedly
musician, mm-hmm, allegedly. Right. He may or may not exist.
Right. Hypothetically.
And he allegedly, hypothetically, wrote music for Ellen, and allegedly, hypothetically, maybe this never happened. he wrote for her during several stand-up specials. She took the music, never paid him for it.
Oh.
Huh. Just
did
so,
he
like,
do it, with,
I,
did he do
are,
it without a contract? Like, just off the strength, trusting that?
I don't think so. I mean, obviously, if there was a contract, it wasn't
allegedly,
anything
allegedly
that
was
ironclad. Allegedly. Yeah. Allegedly. But, yeah, it's crazy because in L.A. especially, people have secretly known about Ellen for forever, but she's so powerful that if they get the floodgate to open, if they get one person to talk, it's going to be a shit show. It's, yeah, like Lea Michele. I had heard shit about Lea Michele for years from people who worked very closely with her who were like, she's evil. And then as soon as one black person had the gumption to say something when she did a faux Black Lives Matter post, the floodgates opened.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, but we don't want Ellen's floodgates opening because whoo-cha, it's going to be...
Side note, less important, but nice use of gumption. I love when you throw that word in conversationally.
Gumption bonus.
I know you like words, Noah.
Yeah. Okay, and lastly, I just want to talk because, you know, this deals with your region of the globe, Noah, and also, Lacey, a place you have a lot of experience, the Hamptons, New York, the Northeast. Not to say you're from the Hamptons, but I feel like,
yeah,
New Yorkers
say,
much more familiar with
region,
the Hamptons.
Sure,
I've lived there.
I know you said you've done a little, you've worked some events, you had to live out there, you have experiences with, mm-hmm, the clientele. The one time I had ever been to the Hamptons, it was a wedding for one of my dad's college friends, and he was his wife was the daughter of an investment banker. And to this day, I have never been in such physical proximity to that kind of wealth and opulence in my entire life. I could not believe what I was seeing. And it got me, they were serving my 17-year-old ass like full mugs of Grey Goose. And I was like, you know what? Thank you, Wall Street. One day I would like to be like this too. And therefore I will fight to protect your wealth and make sure you do not pay 1 cent in taxes because I like what I'm seeing here, y'all.
How quickly you got turned out.
Oh, yeah.
Bloomberg 2020.
Immediately, yeah. Just boomer. Just boom, boom. I'm in the room. So in Southampton, is Southampton a nice Hampton? I don't know.
Southampton's is expensive. It's got real estate, celebrities. It's like a very trendier area of the Hamptons.
Like in
East Hampton's like the old people. Montauk is the really, really young people and the locals, but also there's like fun bars and restaurants there.
Thank you for looking that up.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah. She also sounds like it's like House Hunters, like bougie edition. We're like, you guys are going to love Southampton. Like Nolan Miles are two comedians, interracial couple, just looking to put roots down in the Northeast. So this whole thing, and it makes sense now that you're saying it's the nice part, because opening for the Chainsmokers is DJ D-Saul, or as you know him, CEO of Goldman Sachs, David Solomon. This
Stop.
Man, yes, he was opening for them. And also, one of the town supervisor of Southampton, Jay Schneiderman, was also an opener. Now, these tickets were very expensive. Like, the whole idea was it was going to be socially distanced. You could drive in. It was like a drive-in concert. Some tickets were going, they were between $1,250 and $25,000, okay, for No Kid Hungry, Children's Medical Fund of New York. It was, like, supposed to be this fun thing. But then shit just got out of hand. Even though they tried, they said, look, we've got all these CDC things. They said people are going to fill out like a COVID survey. They'll get a face mask, have a temperature taken, and they have like, there's hand sanitizing stations. But the deal was nobody stayed in their car. It turned into like a straight up concert with like a ton of people just gathered around each other.
What do you think is going to happen when DJ Solomon is on the ones and twos?
Yeah, when D-Saul is just fucking on the wheels of steel. I mean, you already know the appeal.
Although there's no group that you can get together that's going to be more dangerous when it comes to a pandemic than rich people. They are the most entitled, selfish people. So they're not going to do any, because like you wear a mask to protect other people. They ain't going to do that.
Yeah. They're like, they're rich too. They're not sick. That's for poor people. Bye.
That's for poor people.
Yeah. When I think also too, at a certain point, life shows you to your face that money can actually solve a multitude of problems for you very quickly. So in a way I'm like, I get it. Yeah, too. If I grew up like that and my parents never taught me the value of work and what money was, I'd be like, yeah, like you're rich, you can go to the doctor. Like if you don't like your body, you can go to the doctor. If you don't like your car, you buy a new one. If you don't like so
if you do a murder, you just call a guy.
Yeah, your dad just like your dad just like blackmails the chief of police.
Yeah, well, so that's Succession end of season one.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. And then you get to like just kind of, you know, blow some steam off in a lovely spa in Iceland. So the thing that, you know, when New York State officials, including Governor Cuomo and like the, you know, the health commissioner of New York saw this, they were aghast. You know, they just could not believe what the fuck they were seeing. The health commissioner said, I'm at a loss as to how the town of Southampton could have issued such a permit for an event, how they believed it was legal and not an obvious public health threat. So again, I remember I told you, the man who is the town supervisor, Jay Schneiderman, he was opening, he was participating in it, and he also had to respond because he tried to defend himself by saying, quote, we believe the conditions of the permit were violated. No shit. And then he goes on to say, the organizer was supposed to make sure that people stayed in their square. They didn't have enough security. I had conversations with the organizers making sure they were going to enforce the rules. It's unfortunate that they allowed this to happen. Excuse you, sir. You are a city official who probably had a hand in even okaying this permit. I just also want to say he goes on to defend himself when they were talking about like, yo, but your band played there. What the fuck are you talking about? He said that when his band performed, okay, when I was on stage, motherfuckers were following the rules. He said, quote, I stayed for a while, and when I became aware of the VIP area, I told the two security guards from the organizers to stop. So you have to come to the car right now. That's what I said to one of the guys in my band. We have to leave.
He said, after we finished our set.
Yeah, after we get the set, yeah, let me take a few pictures backstage, then we gotta go. Once I hear somebody,
I took a few pictures, shook a few hands, played a game of suck and blow, and then I left.
But this whole thing, like, it's just everybody, like, even the people in the municipality are involved in fucking up. But, oh boy, so 1% or Coachella, you love to see it.
But
look, they didn't get their Coachella.
You know when, like, your boss pressures you to come to an event that they're doing in their personal life?
Oh.
Imagine these Goldman Sachs employees that were like, oh, by the way, you got to drop 25 grand on a ticket. I'm DJing this weekend. Can you imagine like the 24-year-old traders at the trading desk at Goldman
blowing all
spending
their money,
their bonuses to go see DJ D-Saul?
They're like,
also, I fully blame COVID because this guy was probably like, fuck it. I got to seize the day and become a DJ. Like, this is probably his first DJing event. That's how fucking rich he is. He's like, I don't know. I'll open for the Chainsmokers. Yeah. I'll make it happen.
Right. He's like, I got Deadmau5 to give me lessons. I paid him in cocaine. It's just like, wow. Bless them all. It shows you, really, again, this is why we aspire to protect the wealth of billionaires so that we may one day completely act recklessly and foolishly in the midst of a pandemic and then put people who actually had to work to survive at risk with our recklessness. It's all just a vicious cycle. You hate to see it, or maybe you do. Either way, Noah, it's been fantastic having you on the show today.
Always a pleasure. Thank you
for stopping by, man. Always love hearing from you. Always good to talk to you. What is, you know, let people know where they can find you, follow you, you know, listen to some of your comedy, and let us know a tweet that you've been liking.
So they can follow me at my website, Noah G Comedy, or on Instagram at Noah G Comedy. They cannot follow me on Twitter, and I do not have a tweet that I like because I got off Twitter 2 weeks ago.
Hey, I feel so
much better and happier and healthier for it. Fuck Twitter.
You got off the island.
But I do know that the Daily Zeitgeist listeners are active on Twitter. They used to show a little bit of love and a lot of hate after every time that I came on. So they can come and DM me on Instagram anytime at Noah G Comedy.
Boom. Yeah, it's true. I'm like, I've slowly and slowly used it less and less and less. I realize how much it affects my mental well-being by being on there more than
it used to be fun. Full of hatred. Yeah.
It used to be fun. And now I'm like, you know what? I don't need to inform myself. Like the stuff that, like, because granted, there are things that happen on Twitter that a lot of the mainstream media won't get covered. But
sure.
I have other ways of interacting with those stories that I don't have to log into Twitter and then go down a rabbit hole of watching, you know, Karen's going off down in Australia. I see Zeit Gang down there. They've been sending me a few links of Aussie Karens. They're pretty intense, mate. They're like, you fuckwit. They're so fucking it. I mean, woo. We just need a Karen Olympics.
You do a really good Australian accent.
I watched a lot of TV by myself as a child and would like to dial in accents as a way to entertain myself. Lacey, hello.
Yes.
Where can people find you, follow you, listen to you, support you, and even put people onto a tweet that you like?
Guys, you can follow me as always at DIVALACI Diva Lacey on all platforms. And if you like scams, robberies, cons, frauds, you can listen to my podcast, Scam Goddess. And then a tweet that I have been liking. So this is a tweet that I'm enjoying. It's not actually like a written tweet. It's like a news article from the New York Post about teens who have been dressing up as masked grandmas to score alcohol.
Yes. It was happening like all over, right? In Europe and like Australia and sometime in the US too.
Yes. And this, of course, it's Gen Z. And then here's one of my own tweets about Gen Z that this is pointedly directed at my sister who Mariska Hargitay saved her life. I said, I love that Gen Z talks shit about millennials' economic progress like they aren't about to pay $100,000 for Zoom University.
Oh, yeah. I shouted that tweet out last week of yours when you weren't on the show.
Oh, you did?
I was clocking that tweet. Yeah.
Damn, true, okay, well, that's recycled.
The joke's
but
on you.
Gen Z.
Yeah.
Gen Z, like, oh, you didn't get drunk in a building?
You didn't get drunk in a dorm? You've never been on campus?
At least get with the winning team, ho.
Yeah, at least my debilitating educational bill came with some experiences that involved human contact.
But right, it's funny, at least we got to get drunk.
There were also ones, though, too, that were comparing ones where, like, grandparents would be like, yeah, and I had to walk in 6 feet of snow, and they're like, it was 2020, and it was a motherfucking pandemic. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? No snow. So, yeah, they might have a little bit of a heat they can bring to their kids, too. Okay, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. Also, my other podcast, 420 Day Fiancé, where we talk about 90 Day Fiancé. Sophia Alexander and I. So check that out. Keep the laughs going. Promise you there's no politics in that one. And let's see. The tweet that I like, a couple. First one is from at Tawny Newsom, at Tawny Newman. She says, very proud of the black people in my life actively resisting, refusing opportunities aimed at harvesting our knowledge and experience for free. Be wary of folks wanting to, quote, add your voice, which means make their brand appear diverse, or, quote, hear your thoughts, which means profit from your lived experience. Yeah, that's always... We always got to have our head on a swivel, but yes, shout out to everybody who's able to at least turn down those opportunities, because sometimes surviving takes precedent. Next tweet is from Solomon Giorgio. At Solomon Giorgio, he says, I practice coming out to my parents on my baby niece. If this sounds cute and endearing, please understand that I was screaming, I'm gay and you can't stop me at a 16-month-old baby.
Solomon's funny, man. He's so funny.
Solomon's hilarious. Killing it. And you can't stop me.
And a baby. You can find us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter, at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We got a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes every day. Thank you. And today, the song we're going to ride out on is from Texas's very own Kruong Bin. I just love their whole trippy beach vibes. They just always take me to another place. Laura's bass playing. I love her bass playing. I love her bass tone. This track is called Pelota, and it's just got the fantastic Latin vibes to it. And, you know, they're just, again, just close your eyes and take a vacation inside your own home to this track. And other than that, The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts and this one, check out the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Until then, check us later, talk about some trends, and we'll see y'all tomorrow. Peace and blessings. Love. Bye-bye.
Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.